Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the My Big Break podcast, a new series from Motorsport where I try to get top drivers and team bosses to reflect on what were the key moments that led them to where they are today. I'm Chris Medland, and in this episode, I'm joined by Kimi Räikkönen, who might seem like a man of few words a lot of the time, but can actually be an incredibly engaging interview, as was the case here as he recalls the one decision that really kicked off his racing career and how he nearly didn't go for it. He also explains why he turned down offers to stay in Formula One in 2010, was unhappy about an approach a year later, but then made the call to return in 2012, and it has led to him becoming the most experienced F1 driver in history. Kimi, thanks so much for joining us on the Motorsport Magazine podcast. We're here to talk about big breaks in your career, moments that kind of led to you being where you are today and taking the path you did. Started out, like a lot of people, in go-karts, getting competitive. Were you just doing it for fun? Was it just enjoyment in Finland, or was there ever a point where you suddenly thought, you know what, I'm quite good at this. I could make a career out of this.
I'm sure there has been many times, but also on the other hand, it's for sure it started out of fun, out of doing something. You know, we used to do a little bit motocross when we were very young. I think my brother started when he was 3 and when I was 5 or something like that, and doing at home. But more like destroying the garden. So I think our parents, especially father, thought that maybe we need to do something else than destroying the garden. So I ended up buying one go-kart for like sharing for us. And then, we went to basically do it for fun, and then got another one because my brother is quite a bit taller, so we had to chase the pedals, and it was always a normal fight. So I started from there. So I'm sure it started as a, you know, something to do, and it was as a family hobby, I guess. And going around Finland after some years doing racing, but then I guess there's been a lot of different mindsets over the years and on the way. But I didn't really probably think that obviously was I happy to go outside of Finland racing, but we never really had much money, and then obviously we had people helping and our cousins helping, and to be even able to go to Europe to race. But let's say it didn't start the most fastest way in Europe, but because how different it is to Finland. But I think I realized quite quickly that obviously the money is the one thing, but we were able to one way or another to find money and loan money from the bank to do, be able to do in Europe. And but then I also knew that I will never have a chance to, let's say, that we don't have the money to go out of the go-karts. But I was, let's say, happy to get to the point that it didn't cost anything for us. So I could race for, let's say, free and get some money from working in the kart shop on the same time. So, that's basically how it started.
So you say there that, you know, working the kart shop kind of helped you fund the career. Was that
not really fun, but like, because on that point I got everything for free from Peter de Bruin. So, but I got some, I don't know, cash money, I don't know, 100 guilders a week or whatever it was, you know. But basically everything was free for me on that point. So, and that was 98. Mm-hmm. So basically the last year that I was doing go-karting, like I did on 99 also some, but But yeah, I didn't think that I have the chance to go after that to car racing. But then luckily, obviously, my managers contacted and offered me a contract. But it took a while before I was kind of deciding if I sign it or not. And but it had nothing to do with the contract itself. It was more my mechanic on that time, Finnish guy, my friend, was obviously he had a history in racing and in England. And let's say not the most nicest history of, you know, the normal story that often happens, especially on those days. That and that was, let's say, 90s, mm-hmm. early 90s, maybe late 80s. That, you know, they paid on somebody and suddenly the team disappeared and the money went in the same way. So there was kind of, you know, a lot of those scary stories that, okay, you sign this and then it will end up very badly and this and that. So I think, you know, deciding on that. And also I didn't understand this pretty much nothing out of the contract. So, you know. Obviously, they were like on the floor, like here, we just put everything on the floor and left it there and sometimes looked at it and might be a few days and then looked at it again. And it was kind of, I don't know, I don't remember exactly how long it took, but in the end, I decided to sign it. And obviously, that was, let's say, the big change because then I had at least a plan. Or they had a plan for me, so without that, for sure, I would never have, let's say, gone out of the go-karts.
Yeah, so that was to come and race Formula Fords, Formula Renaults?
Formula Renault. Oh, yeah, it wasn't really saying that, what?
Okay.
It was that, okay, we'll make your contract X years and we'll pay you until you start making money and we'll sort it out one way or another. So
was that David Robertson?
Yeah, Dave and Steve.
Yeah. So
obviously at first I didn't know about Steve. Mm-hmm. It was with basically Dave. But then let's say when I did my interview, first they wanted me to come to England to once it got signed and everything. So obviously that was, where would it be? I think end of 98 maybe. Mm-hmm. I went to do a test and that was on Formula Ford. Mm-hmm. And then I guess it went, I think I did two tests. One in, what is it? Truxton, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, fairly near London, about an hour and a half from London. Yeah.
And then another one in Durrington, I think. Mm-hmm. And then I guess they were happy. And then I kind of after that, I found out about Steve because he was kind of there watching, but I'd never met him before. Mm-hmm. Well, I met him when I first went to England, but that was like just giving me a phone and disappeared. So it was like not really matching. So, and then we signed the contract and then it got decided that it was for my Renault.
So how did you meet Dave then? And because you say, you're signing over your life at that point to say, okay, I'm going to trust you guys to help me make a career out of this and leaving Finland to do that. So how did they even come into your life to meet them?
Yeah, obviously I was living that point in Holland. So it was during 98, I think we were like in Norway doing, Scandinavian Championship. Mm-hmm. And I think I got contacted by Harald Huisman. I don't know if you know, but and he was something to do with Dave and Steve and he's obviously Norwegian and he had a go-kart track and he used to race himself in the past. And so, and I think he was something to do with them before anyhow, with Chancellor or something. Mm-hmm. Might be wrong, but that's my understanding. So, so he contacted me and wanted to meet us when we were there. He was close by anyhow to basically where where his home was and where we were. So we went to meet him and then kind of all started from there. And I think when I was at Holland, and what was the guy's name? Used to be team boss in Lotus a long time ago. Peter Collins?
Yes, Collins, yeah.
Yeah. I think him, yeah.
Yeah.
And he kind of somehow told Dave and Steve, I guess. And obviously, they had experience of helping because they had or Dave, he worked with Chainsaw before. So then I guess it went well for them, and then they were looking for another one. And somehow people told, I guess they were looking, and then some people told them about me, and it all kind of started from there. So,
how difficult was it then to make that decision to sign the contract? Because what were your other options at that point? Was it kind of...
Go-kart.
Stay karting?
Yeah. So obviously with the same team, with Peter De Bruyne and... Jose, I was very happy there, and I knew that he's going to be a bit upset if I go, but that was really the either I stay or I'll go, and I don't know, like I said, it took a while to kind of know, is it a good thing, is it going to end up in tears and this and that, but obviously it worked out okay. And, but always it was completely different. Something different that I'm used to, so it was also just based on that difficult to kind of decide.
When you then arrived, I think I saw this in your book, you signed this contract, you're coming to the UK and they're going to choose where to put you, and is it right that you landed at Heathrow and no one was there, you didn't know where to go?
Obviously I met Dave in Pranchats before, once we kind of drove to from Holland with my mechanic to meet him. Obviously I didn't speak at all English, so he made most of the talking. But when it all got sorted and after the test and everything, when I went to England, I flew from Finland, Heathrow, I guess, and then had to take a train. Because I got used to a fax on those days, not phones. Well, the phones were, but it wasn't like today. So I got the fax that where I need to go and this and that. So went there and took the train from the airport to what's the main railway station in London.
From the airport, it might be to Paddington, I guess.
Yeah, somewhere there.
Or Waterloo, one of those.
Well,
you can't remember which one.
Yeah, somewhere there. And then I was supposed to meet, Steve. I don't know if it said Steve or whatever. But so I was standing there and didn't really know, what to do. Apart from, obviously, from the facts that I need to still go somewhere. So, and I met him and he just gave me basically phone and left. So I had a phone then, and I had to. I have no idea where it is. I think it's where the team was based, close by. So it probably like a couple hours from London, changing the train at once, and obviously first time going there. So a bit. I wasn't sure because then it started to get dark, and I had to change the train. If I'd took a wrong train at some point, I'm a long way from, let's say, from where I started, like a few hours probably, and it was dark, and I asked help from somebody to just tell me where I had to jump off, and I saw the kind of the paper that I had, and I jump off from one point, and it was pretty dark, and the way that it was like somewhere nowhere. So and waited for a while in at the railway station, a very small one, if I remember correctly. And then suddenly, 10, 15 minutes, whatever it was, somebody came and picked me up. So it was the team. I cannot say that I remember who was it, but anyhow, I went to the team Haywood Racing. Yeah, in the owner's home, so I stayed there, and they had I think two kids, quite young, so learning kind of one, the younger one at least learning to speak, and obviously for me it was perfect. And I work with I went to the shop with them to do, or with him, and I don't know, probably do mostly the teas and stuff, and, you know, being around. But yeah, basically started from there.
So was there a point on that journey when you're thinking, should I have signed this contract?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't remember. I'm quite okay to just go and don't worry too much about anything. So, but for sure, yeah, I remember that I was thinking if I'm taking the, I don't know, wrong direction or wrong train, when I had to change the train or something, it would be quite interesting to try to figure my way somewhere. But yeah, because the language was also an issue. Mm. So, I mean, it all worked out okay, and I was in the right train and everything. And then I think I stayed there like maybe a couple of months, mm-hmm. living with them, before I then moved to where Steve and his brothers and in their home in Essex.
And that clearly proved to be a very good decision to sign that contract, with how quickly they helped your career progress.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously you never know before, and that's why I think, and also because the people that I talk with, they had very bad experience. Mm. So obviously that doesn't help, you know, you get this, let's say, the shittiest side of it, and then you have something that could be really good. So it was kind of, didn't maybe help to make the decision, but in the end, I had nothing to lose. And well, if it goes, you know, bad, it goes bad. Then I come back to go-karts. But I then started the season with them. I think we did Winter Series, maybe.
Yeah. Formula Renault Winter Series, I think.
Yeah, the first one before the championship started in 99. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea where I finished, but I did the first three races, and then like we kind of figured out, or Steve and Dave, more like that the car is not fast enough. It was still when there was two different chassis and cars, and then they decided to stop. So obviously then I was like, oh, okay, now it's really everything is done. And they told me to go to Finland, and I went to Finland, and then I had nothing to do, so I called Peter De Bruyne to have a go-kart. I think I did Finnish Championship and Nordic Championship and the World Championship for him, because I had nothing else to do, and I didn't really hear from Steve and Dave for some months. And I was like, okay, yeah, it's like in my head at least, I was like, yeah, it's all finished. But then we were somewhere doing, I don't know, some festival or something, and I kind of had zero money, and my friends had zero money. I went to check, and suddenly I had money in my bank account, because they kept paying me as a monthly salary. So then I thought, oh, maybe not, I don't know. Why would they pay me if they wouldn't want me to come back? But maybe some months went go, and then they kind of said that, okay, we got your seat on the team that was winning many years, and to do the Winter Series, and then next year. And I think on end of 99, probably, mm-hmm. I went back and did, I did the test on, they used to have this Audi Palmer.
Yeah. Yeah, at Bedford Autodrome.
Yeah, one test on those cars for whatever reason. I don't know why. And then I did the Formula Ford Festival. Mm. And then obviously I knew that I have to see it for the Winter Series. And then the cars changed after the Winter Series, that everybody had the same car. So and then it went quite quickly after that.
I was going to say, yeah, so then you have the full season that goes so well. At which point does someone say to you, because it must have seemed crazy as well, if someone comes up to you and says, we're going to test you in a Formula One car at the end of this year. When did you first get that message?
I had no clue, but until I was at home in Finland with my cousin. And our garden, I don't know, think it was some party or whatever it was, and my phone ring, and I think it was Dave. Mm-hmm. He called and okay, I got you a F1 test in whatever, in 1 month or whenever it was. I don't remember when he called, but it was like, let's say a month and a half before, or maybe a month and 2 months before. And I was like, really? Like, and I had no clue, like before. It wasn't like, okay, we try to do this or that. Mm-hmm. They just only told me once they knew it was. But obviously I was very surprised. That's how it basically went. And then obviously I didn't do the whole series in Formula Renault because I won the champions. Maybe there was like two races left or something. And we didn't do, we did one like after my first F1 test, we did one European championship in Spa just to learn the track. Mm-hmm. In case I had going to race next year. And then kind of went forward from there.
Did you get a say in the F1 test? Did you say to him, are you sure? Or did you feel ready? Were you more than happy to do it?
I don't know. I mean, I remember when he called me, but I don't, apart from obviously him telling me and... I don't know. I doubt I would have questioned because it's not like you get chances. Okay, you get now and then. Okay, I'm not ready or something. And it's not like they're gonna. Okay, yeah, take your time. And, you know, it doesn't work exactly like that. So, I'm sure in my head I wasn't sure how I was gonna end up and all this and that. But what else, you know? If you have a chance, you better try to do the best. And if it works out, it works out. If not, then something else. But also, it was a lot different that I did one test in one day in Formula 3 with Carling before. I did like maybe 20 laps in Finland with one F3.
So not a track that you were going to be in an F1 car anytime soon?
No, it was the first time I did and everything in F3. It was before the Carling test, so maybe it was like... No, it was before... Actually, it was before the first test in England.
Okay.
Formula Ford. But I think it was a bad thing to do it because obviously F3, like, I never driven a race car. Mm-hmm. And I did like 20 laps in one of the tracks in Finland. But I almost crashed the Formula Ford in like, let's say, first lap or something.
Because there's no downforce.
Yeah, like, no grip. It was so close. And afterwards, Steve told me that if I would have crashed it, like, and I missed the wall, like, I was on the grass and everything, like, going sideways and, like, just pure luck in did he hit it. So he said that, yeah, if you crashed on, we would have signed the contract. So.
Really?
I don't know if that, but that's what he told me. So, but I don't think it was helpful to do that because actually it didn't feel too bad because with all the grip and everything. And then the Formula 4 is quite a lot different. Mm. I mean, I enjoyed it, but it was completely different. And so I did that one day with Carling in Pembrey, I guess it was, before the F1 test.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So your big break might actually be not crashing a Formula 3 car in Finland. That could be the big moment that actually
said. No, it was the Formula Ford car.
Formula Ford.
In England, yeah, maybe, yeah. if it's true, I don't know what would happen if I put it in four. Obviously, it doesn't get destroyed that much. So the response, there's not much else to get damaged, but yeah.
But then, did you ever come close to crashing the F1 car? You go to Mugello, it's your first time in
it. I spun once.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and after the first corner, the first left-right, on the left-hand, it just, but like, I just reversed on the gravel and got stuck. But that's all. I don't remember if I was or there was close to put it in there anymore.
Did it feel like it went well? Did you feel like you were showing people that you were
I don't know, because you have nothing to compare. Mm. What do you compare to if you're doing well or not, apart from the lap times? But then, as we know, the lap times could be anything, you know?
Because there's no one else there testing.
There was. There was Michael.
Okay.
I think Dinis was before. Mm-hmm. And there was... somehow I have a feeling that there was a McLaren car with somebody driving, test driver. There was like three cars.
Maybe Pedro at that time, or maybe earlier than that, I guess.
What's his name? I have a feeling that he was there with friends who won in Monaco. When was that?
Panis.
Yeah.
Yeah, Olivier Panis.
Yeah, somehow I have a feeling that he was there.
Okay. But so you couldn't judge what they were all doing and think?
I mean, I could buy a lap time, but like as myself, what do I compare, you know? Mm. Everything feels fast. Like, I don't know if I do well or not. Mm. Like, the first day for sure was difficult because like everything comes so quickly to you.
Mm.
Like, you know, it's almost like you wanna, you know, you put like something going forward, the movie or something like quickly and everything like jumps. But then after one night sleeping, everything, I guess your brain gets used to it, the speed, and then kind of everything slows down to, let's say, that it looks very normal again. Because it was like the corners like came too quickly, almost like you had no time to react. And I did okay. And obviously the braking was difficult to get used to, but I think the most difficult was that, you know, my neck and heavy. And the car on that time didn't have a power steering, so probably any other track would have been a lot easier. But yeah, I think the second day was a lot easier on that point. Obviously everything was hurting, neck and everything, so that didn't go any easier. But like, purely like how with everything got more looking normal and slowing down. And but there was, I think, one very good thing is that somehow they managed to get me 3 days.
Mm.
Even for sure, as if on the physical side, I wasn't ready even for one full day. But then I was not in a rush to try to like go quickly, too quickly, you know, like do something completely stupid.
Mm.
So that was obviously a good thing, because if you have I don't know, half a day or 1 day, obviously you are kind of feeling that okay, this might be my time to show it, and then, you know, accident can happen more easily. But I think that was a nice thing.
I mean, do you look back now and think how incredible it was that Dave and Steve pulled that off so quickly?
Yeah, for sure. I have still no idea how they managed to do it. I never asked. And it's, I guarantee you, it's nothing to do with money, because they didn't pay a single. I know them; they don't pay, you know.
Yeah.
So, I think even Sauber has said he doesn't have a clue why did he give it.
Yeah.
You know, like I guess it was honestly to do with something that they already had shown that they can kind of do a good job also with tension.
Mm.
So probably that helped a lot in the kind of when they had the discussions. And I know that they talked to another team also before or kind of same time. So.
Do you know which team? Did they tell you?
Yeah, I know.
Are you allowed to say?
Yeah, I visited there even. It was Jordan.
Oh, okay.
I visited there once.
So you got
no idea. Clue when it was. I don't remember, but I remember being there.
But then I guess I mean, it's nice now as well, talking about it, and you're an Alfa Romeo, Sauber driver, and you've come full circle. Yeah. Jordan would have been a different team to finish with. But once you got into the Sauber, obviously, again, like Dave and Steve moved you on very quickly. Does all this happen without you knowing? Does it let you just focus on
driving? I mean, obviously, I had like a 3-year contract with them, with Sauber. But I don't know exactly. I don't remember. I'm sure the contracts are somewhere and somebody has them. But like if it was 1 year plus option on them or whatever, I think, no idea. Mm. Well, I don't remember. I'm sure I knew that time, but I don't remember. And then on some point that 2001, obviously, there was talks that started to happen with somehow with McLaren and Mercedes. I don't know if it started from Mercedes or McLaren first, but remember after Canada, the race in the big parties that they used to have, I talked with Norbert and Ron, and it kind of started to go. And then also Mika decided to stop, and they were looking somebody, and yeah, kind of all started around that time, I think. I don't know, maybe they thought. Pretty sure that I talked to them before or something.
But. Yeah, do you think, was it Mika going that really helped though? Because it opened up that seat?
Yeah, I guess they had to find a driver, so I don't know how they end up then choosing who or that. But I guess I did pretty okay in the first year with the experience that I had. So.
Yeah, they obviously saw your potential, and that put you in a race-winning car. If we look at kind of the two biggest teams at the time that you drove for being McLaren and Ferrari, which of those two do you think were kind of the more important move for you? Was it getting into a race-winning car early to show everyone that you're a top-line driver, or was it getting into the one that gave you the title?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, the most important was to get in F1 in the first place. And then obviously, we had a pretty good, decent car on that. Obviously, not the level of those guys, but... like we finished fourth in the championship with as a team with Nick. And, so it was a good car, especially on certain tracks. But yeah, it was obviously nice to get to one of those. There was basically two big teams, and it was McLaren and Ferrari. So it was great to have an offer and to be able to go there and have a chance to go there. It was completely different. It used to be in the old factory when I first went there. Mm-hmm. It was in this...
On the industrial estate.
Yeah, but it was still like... I think when I was at Sauber, it was like 120 people maybe. Mm-hmm. So it was quite small. And the factory wasn't that big, but obviously they did a great job out of it. And so even if the McLaren was in the old factory... it was still a massively different story. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, obviously it was great. It was, everything was different. So, obviously, that was it the first year that we didn't finish many races? I think we
blew
up quite a few times, engines and everything. But obviously the car was, let's say it was the first year. First year with Michelin's also, I think,
I can double check that right here.
2002. So it was all kind of new things, and they were probably not the best specialty to start with, but they improved very quickly afterwards. So yeah, there was a lot of things. So it wasn't like, you know, they were winning all the time. So maybe it worked out okay, you know.
You grew with them, I guess.
Yeah, and, you know, things were getting better. And, you know, it's so many retirements to start with. But, yeah, it was nice to get in it, always.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought that might have been frustrating for you, because I think I've got it here that it was 6 races that you finished or that you classified in the whole season. Many. I mean, now it's totally different, but was it not frustrating because it was a step up in team experience?
I don't remember, honestly. I didn't care much, you know. The one thing that I remember was the race that I lost in like 3 laps to go in Magny-Cours. Because more we went to the end of the year, we started to kind of be faster and obviously lasting longer. So, you know, and certain tracks we were not too bad. So that I remember. The rest, I remember they finished my races, but I have no clue what happened. So, that one I was angry, but more to myself than anything else. So, but I don't know if I've been pretty okay always, you know. If I don't know, something breaks up, what can you do? You know, it's if you are leading or something, it's more less nice, but you know, you're not going to change it. So I don't worry about it too long.
Yeah, because that Manny Cole one was, it would have been your first win. Did you still feel like that was the statement you needed to make, was to get that win under your belt?
I don't think I was doing it for to show it to somebody. It was for myself, you know, more. Mm. And I wasn't really worried that, it wasn't like if I don't win that somebody, you know, that my contract depends on it or something. You know, it was more that obviously I want to win. So, and how close I got, it was quite disappointing, but yeah.
Well, before we wrap up, because I'm wary of time, how much longer we got? Five, perfect. So before we wrap up, I would like to talk about the big move within Formula One that did give you a title, though. And going from McLaren to Ferrari was a blockbuster move. I don't know if it felt like it for you, but certainly everyone on the outside to see you make that switch. Like, had Ferrari been chasing you for a while? I mean, you replaced Michael Schumacher, which is big shoes to fill. Did you have a long build up to that, or did it suddenly come as an offer? Take your pick.
I mean, I don't feel that there was anything that once we started to talk, to me, that was the first time.
Mm-hmm. So they hadn't been chasing you for a while or anything like that?
As far as I know, I don't, you know, I don't think so. But basically, I had a contract until 2006. But then there was some of the... things that we probably didn't think the same way with Ron on mid-2005.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously then somehow Ferrari came in the same picture and we end up signing the contract basically in mid-2005. So obviously I knew it for quite a while, a year and a half before I even going there.
Mm.
And surprisingly, it stayed in, not many people knew it.
Yeah.
It is because it's hard to keep any secret. If you try now, with anybody there, you know, I think it's pointless because people cannot keep them out quiet. But there was only very few people that knew about it. So, it stayed quiet for a long time. Obviously, I knew it. So, it didn't change anything that was going to happen until the end of 2006. So.
Did you worry about it at the end of 2005? Because you finished that year so strongly. A lot of wins, second in the championship. Did you suddenly think, have I made the wrong decision to leave the team?
No, I never worried because obviously there was another year you had to go. So it wasn't like end of that. And, you know, obviously Ferrari was winning a lot on those days.
Mm.
I don't think you go much wrong either. In a top team, you go. Obviously, Ferrari, and from 2000, the 2000, they won most of the until.
Yeah, five straight.
Yeah. So for sure, you know, if you purely look that, you pick them. But I was never worried about, even on dialing 05, they were not that strong and this and that. But then 06, they were suddenly strong again.
Mm.
We were not that strong. I think our car was actually good. At McLaren, but our engine was not where it should have been. So, but I didn't really feel that. I think we told them that, you know, it's not like, I don't try to be replacing Michael to be Michael. I was a different guy, and you know, they were happy with it. And obviously, Jean was there, and he kind of understood that. He worked with Finnish guys in his rally times a lot, so probably had a very good kind of understanding. And I really liked it, him as a team boss always, because he was, you know, what he said, that's how everybody did it.
Mm.
It wasn't like, you know, I feel sometimes it's a bit different, you know. He had the power and he had the kind of people knew that, okay, we'll do how he says and we'll do fine. So I'm very well. So he was very straightforward, you know. There wasn't games played or nothing. You know, he said, this is how it is, and okay, everybody did it. And I think it was really nice, and I really liked it.
Well, as we sit here, you know, most experienced driver in F1, your career is coming to an end. But it nearly ended a lot earlier. You left at the end of 2009, had the 2 years out. How crucial was that phone call, whoever picked up the phone to you from Lotus, who said, we want you to come back in, like, do you fancy it?
Yeah, obviously I had a chance to sign another contract in the end of 2009, but I didn't for many different reasons. But
who was that with?
McLaren.
Oh, well, to go back in 2010.
Yeah.
So that would have been to go alongside Lewis instead of Jensen.
I don't know.
I guess. Okay.
There, but yeah. I mean, we talked about it, and then obviously I had a contract still with Ferrari, and kind of they paid me out. So at one point I said it makes no sense to me to sign it. So. But anyhow, and I was happy to do something else. I was fed up with all the politics. So, I think there was already 2011. If I remember correctly, they asked, because I remember Steve sending me email or text or whatever it was, or called me, that if I would want to go back, and I said, no, I don't. Not interested at all, and he for sure he wanted to, you know. Mm. But I said that no, and then he had some kind of talks with them already. But then what really pissed me off, that it was in the newspaper that they're talking, even if it was supposed to be very secret.
Yeah,
you know. So that really pissed me off, and I told somebody that something about them, and probably not so nice, and because I was so pissed off that, you know, first day talk, and I haven't even talked to them really.
Yeah, you said no at that point.
Yeah, but then like it was in all the news that, oh yeah, they're talking to them, you know. So especially being so fed up with all the politics, and then the first thing that happens is that. So it doesn't really serve it very well. But anyhow, then yeah, later obviously I was doing the rally, and then I went to do the NASCAR, and I enjoyed the racing against people again, because in rally you kind of race against time. So then I thought, oh yeah, maybe I want to do some racing, and then I called Steve that I have a look if you found some option to go back in F1, and then obviously I had a talk with Williams. I think I visited them at the factory once, and met with Toto once, and because he was that time there.
Shareholder there.
Yeah, and then the Lotus thing came on the same time, kind of, and. That once that came up and that got signed pretty, let's say, I would say in 2-3 weeks.
And that was just because you wanted to race other people again?
Yeah.
Was any other category on the table, or was that only F1?
No, I did the Le Mans test on 11, I think, also, with Bashar, but I wasn't sure even to... I wanted to try the car, but I wasn't really like, okay, I want to go and do Le Mans. It went quite quickly once it started, so with Lotus. I wasn't really even watching F1, so I didn't know exactly, like, you know, if they're good or bad. Or I mean, obviously once I was about to sign, I knew that they'd done some pretty good races, so. But it wasn't like, okay, yeah, it needs to be this or that, you know. Either one, the Williams or that would have been, I wouldn't care really. I didn't look at that as a result.
You just wanted to come back.
Yeah. So, and obviously it turned out to be a good team, and as long as it lasted, unfortunately, but yeah.
Yeah, well, we're all very glad that you did come back. It's been great watching your career over the last 20 years. Yeah. So Kimi, thank you very much for your time, and enjoy retirement.
No worries. Thank you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.